So then 5 miles a day turn into adding, I don't know, maybe 7 miles a day to walking. And then that turned into, you know, I was skipping breakfast. And then after a few weeks, I started skipping lunch and exercising over my lunch break. So then I was not only going 7 miles when I got off from work, but I was also doing 3 or 4 miles during my lunch break.
Welcome to the Real Talk 238 podcast with your host, Denise Lee, a licensed professional counselor and nationally board certified counselor in the state of Alabama. The focus of the Real Talk 238 podcast is to have real conversations concerning taboo topics that people in the church may find themselves struggling with or feel they may not be able to talk about. The topics discussed on the Real Talk 238 podcast are intended strictly for informational and educational purposes only. These topics are not a substitute, nor does it replace professional medical, psychiatric, psychological, or mental health advice, nor is it a substitute for a diagnosis or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or a qualified licensed mental health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or mental health disorder. All right now, let's get started.
Welcome everybody to today's podcast. I just wanted to jump on real quick before the interview started. Today, this podcast is about eating disorders. This interview was done in 2021, and I apologize that it took so long to get it out. My friend Cassandra Morton is a social worker who struggled with an eating disorder. And in this podcast, she talks about not only how the struggle began, but also how she overcame it. I really appreciate her willingness to be vulnerable and share her experience to help somebody else. If you know somebody else who is struggling with an eating disorder, or if you are struggling with an eating disorder, then listen to this podcast, share this podcast, because it will be helpful. Up next, I have a very important announcement about the Resolute and Refresh Ladies Ministry Retreat, and then the podcast interview will start right after that. Have a wonderful day. If you are a pastor's wife, a minister's wife, or a woman in ministry, then you will want to listen to this important announcement for some exciting news. Coming March 14th, 15th, and 16th of 2024, there will be a retreat in Omaha, Nebraska. The theme for the 2024 Resolute and Refresh Ladies Ministry Retreat is Recovered All. The definition of resolute is admirably purposeful, determined, and unwavering. Resolute and Refresh Ladies Ministry Retreat is designed for women who are the wife of a pastor, the wife of a minister, or involved in ministry, and who understand how important it is to be purposeful, determined, and unwavering. These women understand that no matter what level or capacity they serve in ministry, there are times when a few days away are needed so they can be the best they can be for their spouses, their families, and their churches that they serve. The purpose of this retreat is to invite women together who are involved in ministry so they can specifically be ministered to and be refreshed. Women who attend this retreat will have a place to just get away for a few days so they can be supported, refreshed, and return to their churches feeling rejuvenated. The speakers who are chosen for this retreat are godly women who are greatly anointed. For those who attend, we'll get to hear 5 amazing and anointed speakers. There will also be a mental health panel where questions that you may have can be answered. The lineup of speakers are Denise Lee, Sylvia Palmer, Esmeralda Delgadillo, Shannon Powell, and Tara Lynn Anderson. The mental health panel will include Denise Lee, Shannon Powell, and Esmeralda Delgadillo. There will be worship, corporate prayer, and a great time of fellowship. To register, go to either the Resolute and Refresh Ladies Ministry page on either Instagram or Facebook and click the link. This will take you to the registration page. For more information, go to Resolute and Refresh Ladies Ministry page on Facebook, or you can send an email at resoluteandrefreshlm@gmail.com. That's resoluteandrefreshlm@gmail.com. Now for the Real Talk 238 podcast, here we go.
Hey everyone, thank you for coming today and listen to the Real Talk 238 podcast. I'm your host, Denise Lee, and I am excited about my guest today. Her name is Cassie Morton. She lives in Jasper, Indiana. She is a licensed clinical social worker, and she has one dog, a miniature golden doodle named Nova, and she's been in church her entire life. She attends Greater Grace Apostolic Church in Oakland City. She has served in ministry as far as Sunday school teacher and choir, and she's been doing that for 10 years. And she describes herself as being easygoing, relaxed, a bookworm. Fun fact about her is she's obsessed with American and world history and enjoys reading literature written or set during the late 1700s to early 1800s. And she just told me that she thought she was born in the wrong era and probably would have been better in the 1800s. How you doing, Cassie?
I'm good.
Welcome to the podcast today, or this evening, actually, is where the time zone we're at.
Thank you.
So you like books?
Yes, I love reading.
Even going through school, you still love reading?
I do.
I am like on the struggle bus with reading. And I think it has to do with school is why, because you've got all those textbooks and I'm just textbooked out. What's your favorite book?
I don't know that I have a favorite book, but my favorite author is Karen Kingsbury.
Is she the one that writes about Amish people?
She writes a lot of just family-based Christian novels.
What is the worst book you ever read?
I don't know, because I've pretty much loved every book I've ever read.
I think the hardest book, let me put it that way, the hardest book I ever read was by Stephen King, was The Tommyknockers. That book was hard because it didn't really get, I couldn't get into it till it's like thick. I swear that book is probably 5 or 6 inches thick. And I didn't get into it till like the very middle of it when it really got interesting. How long have you been a social worker?
I graduated with my master's in social work in the spring of 2017.
Now, are you in private practice at all? Are you working in an agency?
I currently am employed at a community mental health center.
How would you describe your day at work?
So a typical day, I'm the coordinator for a program we have for our kids. So today at work, I had to make some phone calls to get some kiddos scheduled with appointments to see if they qualify for a program. And then I had 2 individual therapy sessions and then some notes and treatment plans.
Fun. And for those of you who don't know, if you think a therapist, all they do is, it looks like one of those little Freud cartoons where somebody's laying on a couch and the therapist is sitting behind their head. It's nothing like that at all. There's a lot of note writing, that goes on beyond the therapy session. I don't like notes, but it's part of the job, comes with the territory. So somebody had passed your name along to me because they said that you have a background of eating disorders. Mm-hmm. That's why I want to do, because I don't think I've really actually had anybody on the podcast yet that is involved in whatever, which way with eating disorders. So that's why I wanted to have you come on. I know we talked before, but of course, not everybody's heard what you had to say. So we kind of like did the I think it was a couple weeks ago, or maybe it was a month ago. I'm not sure. But anyways.
Yeah, it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
So just for the listening audience, tell us where your interest in eating disorders is at.
I don't work with a lot of eating disorders currently. I have a few clients who do, but my interest came from my own struggle with an eating disorder.
How old were you when it started? Because it doesn't creep up instantly.
I was 29 years old now, and this was in the summer of 2019 that it started.
And you're currently now doing your own personal work, whatever that looks like for you, you know, and for everybody, that's going to look different. Not everybody necessarily has to go to a treatment center. I know people that have, but you know, sometimes that's not always the ultimate where you have to go. Not everybody ends up with a tube up their nose, they're into their stomach. Not everybody does that either. You know, eating disorders comes in all sorts of different ways. The ones that most often people think of is anorexia, but there's also bulimia. Anorexia is where you're literally not hardly eating at all. And if I'm wrong on this, help me out on this. So, mm-hmm. And the bulimia, of course, you eat a big amount in a short amount of time, and then you're throwing it up, or you're going and running or doing exercise, anything to burn off those calories. Some people have used laxatives. They'll use water pills, a lot of diet drinks in there, doing coffee. And then you have the other extreme end of it is binge eating disorder. And that's, you know, somebody who is just, they just binge. Like, I'm not talking, you know, maybe on Sunday we go to the buffet, not like that, but it's like you go past that point of feeling stuffed. It's like way beyond that, kind of like on Thanksgiving when you've, you know, holiday and you've just stuffed yourself to this, you know, let's unbutton the top button of our skirt or pants. And then there's another one. And a lot of people are not familiar with this one because it used to be diagnosed just for little kids, but they've actually changed it. And that is ARFID, avoidant restrictive food intake disorder. That is somebody who, you know, they're not anorexic and they're not bulimic, but what they do is they go through periods of where they are restricting their food, like restricting it. And it's not all the time. So in your case, like, do you know what, well, first of all, what was there, all of it, some of it, or a certain area?
Mostly for me, it was probably the anorexia. I restricted, and then the little bit of food I did eat, I would go exercise it off. Even if it was only like 100 calories, I would still go exercise.
So you would still go exercise. What would be going through your mind when you were, as you said, the little bit you did eat, like what would go through your mind?
I shouldn't eat this. It's wrong to eat this. I need to lose more weight.
And if you're comfortable sharing, did you even know that you were headed that direction to begin with?
Not really. The spring of 2018, I actually started a journey to get healthy, like lose some weight, exercise more, because I wasn't really exercising and I would just come home from work and lay around and do nothing. So I started a journey to just exercise more to help like just decrease my stress and things like that. And, you know, I actually went from, it was maybe almost 170. And I was just like, you know, I just want to lose a few pounds and get healthy. And I went to 125.
So at the start, you were at 170.
Yes.
And then you got down to 125.
Yes. And it was like, and you know, but I lost that in a very healthy, slow pace.
And that's important.
Yes. I was still eating, you know, normally, whatever normal looked like for me, just not snacking as much throughout the day as I had been prior to that. So then by early 2019, there was a lot going on at home. Like my sister had just gotten a divorce and moved her and her two kids moved back in with me and my mom and dad because I was still living at home at the time. And a lot started happening and I just started exercising more.
As far as like career wise, was there any extra stress as far as your career?
Not really. I mean, I had just taken, you know, my first round of exams because there's two exams I had to take for my license. I just taken and passed my first one around that time, which is awesome.
Yes. Yes. If anybody knows anything about those exams, I don't care if it's social work or clinical mental health counseling, they are a nightmare. So if you see somebody, if you go to a therapist's office and they have that certificate up on the wall, yeah, they earned it. They earned it, yep. Baby. They earned it. Because it is tough. It is tough.
So yeah, I had just taken that exam and things at work were going, you know, pretty good. I was going back and forth between two different offices, but I didn't mind it because I had like clients in two different counties, which is awesome because I got to see, you know, kind of two different ways of life because one county is very rural and then my county is kind of, we're still rural, but we have a few more resources than the other county.
So home life was stressful with your sister there, and not that you didn't want your sister there, because I imagine you love your sister and you want the best for her and you love your nephews, but just when somebody moves away from home and then comes back, it's like it throws everybody, because everybody got used to this new normal. Mm-hmm. And then you move away and come back and it's like it disrupts that new normal.
It definitely did. You know, as a way to kind of cope and de-stress, I started exercising more. I mean, I was still eating fairly normally at that time, but like exercising 3-4 miles a day, I think turned into like 5 miles a day. And then over time, my sister, related to her divorce and stuff, she just got really depressed and wanted to just kind of sleep all the time or not be home around anybody. So I was kind of, I guess, expected to help more with my nephews, give up some of my time.
So it just added even more stress to you.
Yes. So then 5 miles a day turned into adding, I don't know, maybe 7 miles a day to walking. And then that turned into, you know, I was skipping breakfast. And then after a few weeks, I started skipping lunch and exercising over my lunch break. So then I was not only going 7 miles when I got off from work, but I was also doing 3 or 4 miles during my lunch break at work.
Now, at any time during this, were you forgetting to eat, or were you just purposely not eating or avoiding, or was it just, like you said, trying to deal with the stress?
I think it was a combination of all three. And my mom kept telling me, you need to lose more weight. How much weight do you plan on losing? So I just kept on listening to her.
So here you are, you're losing weight at a healthy rate, not super fast, but then you have somebody that you love and care about, and they're adding in this extra pressure. Hey, you need to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of message did that send to you?
It sent to me like, I'm not good enough for her if I have to look a certain way or it's not enough.
That's definitely extra pressure.
It also sent to me, I'm not perfect in her eyes. She used to push me with my college grades, like anything less than an A was unacceptable in college. And so with my weight, when she no longer had my grades to push me on, I kind of felt like my mom started with my weight. Because it's, hey, you can't be perfect at grades anymore because you're not in school, but...
Yeah, what about this over here?
Yes.
That is a lot of extra stress. And some people I know that do struggle with eating disorder, many times that is one of the things, that because it's that whole thing of perfectionism. You know, I've got to be perfect. I got to have this all together. I have to have all this put together.
Yes.
And it can be quite challenging to live up to whatever expectation that is. And then really it's an expectation that you've placed on yourself.
Yeah.
But of course, when you have somebody else piping in, it doesn't help at all.
It did not help, because I mean, I was happy at 120, 125 pounds. I felt great. I had a lot of energy. Walking 3-4 miles a day was enough for me. I mean, I even would skip like maybe one day a week and just take a break and let that just kind of be my cheat day, my day to just kind of not exercise and not necessarily eat anything and everything I wanted, but maybe eat a few extra snacks throughout the day or eat an extra piece of cake at dinner time, whatever.
Did any time in there, did you ever start noticing like the guilt?
To be honest, I didn't. I eventually got to a point where I didn't feel anything anymore.
I get the hunger part of it. You know, you don't feel the hunger pains, but did that include emotions as well?
I didn't feel any emotions. Like, I think the only emotion I felt was just anger. Anger, like, I don't even know who I was angry at.
But it was just there.
It was there. And I would just take it out on anybody in my family that was around, even my nephews who didn't deserve it.
Obviously, you started seeking out help. And where do you think like the bottom was at? You know, everybody's got a bottom they hit.
Yes. So I went from a healthy 120, 125 to a very low 93 pounds in just a few short months.
Now, was your mom at this point, was she still making comments?
A few here and there, but not as many.
Not as many. Wow.
Yes.
93 pounds. I mean, that is just literally skin and bones and some organs.
That's all you could really see.
Did you at any time during that? Because here's the other side with eating disorders, especially with not so much the binge eating, but the others where you're restricting and maybe vomiting or purging. And purging is anything like vomiting or doing the excessive exercising, doing laxatives, any of that stuff, you know, doing water pills. I don't think what a lot of people realize. And, you know, when I was an undergrad, I actually, my mentor, she, this was her specialty, was binge eating disorder. And that's what she did research on. And I learned a good bit that direction. But some other things I did not know was that when you are basically, you're starving yourself, that's all it boils down to. What ends up happening is people don't realize is that, okay, if your body isn't getting it from nutrients, like from food, vitamins, minerals, anything that we can get to feed our body, to fuel our body, what ends up happening, it starts turning in and eating on our internal organs. And this includes our brain, our heart, our lungs, all those vital organs. And so particularly with anorexia, and I believe also with bulimia, I know people who've gone into treatment and they literally will not let them lift a single thing because they've lost so much weight. Their heart is so weak because it's took that toll on their heart. Were you having any type of health complications or problems with cognition at that point?
The biggest thing I can think of is like a simple task, like making my bed or walking up the stairs. I would have to pause just to walk up the stairs because I'd run out of breath. Or making my bed, a task that usually takes me like 5-10 minutes would take me like 20 to 25 minutes because I was having to stop every couple seconds to catch my breath because I didn't have any. The only time I could get energy was when I wanted to walk or work out on the elliptical. That's the only time I could get enough energy to do it.
Now, did anybody other than your mom, did any of like your friends or people at church, did they ever come up to you and they make mention or concern?
Yes, actually at church. So in November 2019, I was still in like the low 100s. I hadn't quite reached 93 pounds yet. My sister had a suicide attempt and almost succeeded. And about a week or two after that, we were getting ready. It was a Sunday morning and our church was getting ready for our annual Christmas program that we have every year. And I had to go talk to my pastor's wife about something related to the Christmas program for my class. And before I even talked to her, she looked at me and I'll never forget what she said. I didn't want to hear it at the time, but I was later grateful she said something.
What did she say to you?
She said in a very caring but stern voice, she said, "I think it's time you stop losing weight. You're done. You've had enough."
So she definitely noticed.
She definitely noticed.
You guys ever have a conversation about that moment later?
We did later on, about, I don't know, maybe a month later, we had a conversation about it.
How was that conversation?
That conversation went really well because, I mean, there were a few other events that happened leading up to that conversation, but that conversation went really well. And she even told me, she later questioned whether or not she should have said that. And I was like, you know, I didn't want to hear it when you did, but I needed to. And she was like, whenever I said that, you hung your head and looked down. And she's like, it was then I knew you were doing it intentionally. Because she was like, at first, I didn't know if maybe there was a medical condition that you had that you just weren't telling anybody about, or if it was intentional. And she's like, when you hung your head.
I don't know if people realize this. So as therapists, we're always looking for body language. What is the body language? And anytime I have a client that I'm engaging with and they look down, that just right away tells me, okay, there's shame going on. Mm-hmm. It could be other things as well, but predominantly it is shame. Whether or not you admit it, whether or not you own up to it, your body is going to tell on you. You hung your head down in shame.
Yes. I don't remember doing that, but she said I did. And the only thing I said back to her was, I'm working on it, even though I really wasn't. Because to be honest, I wanted to get healthy. I knew where I was at wasn't healthy. This time, I think I was somewhere around 100. I hadn't quite reached that below 100 mark yet. But I didn't know how to go back because I had gone so long with the way things were. I don't even know if I was eating the 500 calories in a day anymore. But the only thing that I would eat in a day would be a bowl of oatmeal at the end of each day. That's it.
Yeah, that's not a lot of calories. And that's not healthy.
No.
That is not healthy. And I'm not fussing at you by all means. You know that. But like for people who think, oh, well, I'll just skip meals. Well, you know what? Here's the other thing too about eating disorders, especially like with the AFRID and the anorexia and even bulimia, you know, it's that whole thing of control. Mm-hmm. Okay. I can't control what's happening at home. I can't control what's happening in my job. I can't control what's happening in my school life, but by George, I can control food. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I'm just going to say this. That is a lie from the enemy. That's a lie from Satan. It really is. And because here's the thing. Yeah, it looks that way. It looks like you can control it at first, but guess what happens?
It ends up controlling you.
It ends up controlling you. then you go through that phase of, okay, you're going to, and you may, I don't know if you experienced this when you were starting to work your way back, but for some people, it's like that whole guilt of, is it okay to eat this? And literally will cry tears because they don't even know if it's okay to eat whatever it is. Like maybe a piece of chocolate, or maybe they're eating dinner with their family and just start sobbing because it's just too much to even sit there and take a bite of macaroni and cheese or a bite of pizza. It gets to be too much. And there's all that guilt. And that is a lie from the devil. And I'll just say that, because who else wants to make us feel condemned? It ain't God. God doesn't want to condemn us. He may convict us of some things. There's two types of condemnation. There is condemnation from the devil, and then there's self-condemnation. And you may think, well, why is a therapist sitting here talking about the devil? Because it's true. A lot of our guilty gut feelings, okay, that's either going to be self-condemnation. And if you don't know what that is, it's that I should have, I could have, I should have done this different. The other type of condemnation, it's usually, well, why didn't you do this? And why this? And why that? And it's all internal. It's all those internal thoughts that run rampant through our head. I had a conversation recently with somebody, and I was explaining to them the difference between, you know, what is condemnation and what is self-condemnation. And it hit me just like, wow. Here I'm explaining it to them, and I'm just like, wow, what a concept. And I'm like, thank you, God, for shining that light. But like, as far as you, like, was there a point where like that guilt, like if you took a bite of pizza, or maybe you ate a little extra, did you deal with that guilt feeling?
I did. I had to basically, like, every time I would eat, give myself permission. Like, it's okay to eat. And in my brain, I would have to list off like all the reasons why I needed to eat a meal.
Yeah, you went through the list. What did that list look like?
It looked like, hey, you need to eat because you need the nutrients. Your body needs the nutrition. God wants you to eat. You need to regain weight. You've got to get healthy again. And the list went on and on. And there's probably like, I don't know, a dozen different things.
Yeah.
That I would list.
I think that's good too. That's a really good way to try to counteract where all that negative talk.
And then there were times when I would be eating where I would start to feel guilty while I was eating. So I'd have to push my plate away for a minute and go back through the list again, and then bring my plate back and finish eating it.
You know, and here's the other thing too, just because, you know, we're therapists does not mean we don't have our own stuff we deal with. I know I do. We don't have it all together. We went to school. We learned some skills. I always say my master's program was probably the most expensive counseling I ever got, but I learned a lot, and God takes that and he'll use that. But the thing of it is, as therapists, especially therapists, Christian therapists, is that we make sure that not only are we doing what we need to do for us, but also for our clients and those we serve in ministry, whatever that looks like. So back to the conversation like you had with your pastor's wife. So she said she saw your head drop in shame. Mm-hmm. I mean, she didn't say that. I'm saying that, but your head dropped, and that's really just, it was a shame drop. That's what it was. What about other conversations? Did any of those come up?
Back in December, 2019, this is actually New Year's Eve. I still hadn't started my recovery yet. At this point, I was right at 97 pounds. It was like January 2020 whenever I reached that 93 pounds.
So it wasn't 96, it was 93 pounds.
Yes. So New Year's Eve 2019, I can never forget this moment, because it was just like, I've never felt like so out of control of my emotions as I was that day. I remember it because I was getting ready. I had taken the day off work because where I work, we work New Year's Eve.
That's a bummer. It is a bummer. And they know people are, going to be out that night doing whatever. Yes.
Well, I had taken the day off work that whole week off work, because I was going to be going to our state's annual holiday youth convention in Indianapolis that week. So I take a New Year's Eve off to pack and stuff, because I knew I'd be doing a lot New Year's Day and wouldn't have time to pack my stuff, because the event started the day after New Year's Day. I'd packed that morning, and then later that afternoon, I had done another workout. It was a very cold day, so I just worked out on the elliptical in my dad's garage. And I came back in the house. My dad was getting ready to go running. My mom was at work. And then my sister had just left to go spend New Year's with one of her best friends. So my dad has, he's like, hey, I'm getting ready to go running. Would you be able to take a shower and be out before I get back so I can have the bathroom? I'm like, you know, sure, no big deal. He left and I was home by myself. I went upstairs to my room to grab my stuff. I went back down to get in the shower. I was getting ready to get in when I realized I had forgotten something in my room. So I turned around and grabbed my towel off the sink so I could run back upstairs and grab it. And as I did, like, I saw myself out of the corner of my eye. Like, I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror.
So at this point, you finally, like, saw yourself. And people may think that's crazy because we can look at ourselves in the mirror, but we really not see ourselves.
Yes. Like, because every time I looked in the mirror, all I could see, you know, was bad or what I thought was bad. But this time I looked in the mirror and I just turned and stood there. I think I might have even dropped my towel on the floor. And I just turned it and stood there and stared at myself. I started sobbing, uncontrollable, could not stop sobbing because I saw nothing but skin and bones and felt anger and hatred towards myself. I saw my ribs sticking out. I saw my shoulder blades sticking out.
I'm over here. I'm about to cry. I mean, just the thought of that.
It was a powerful moment. And that moment standing there, I think I stood there that way in the mirror for like 5-10 minutes, maybe, could not bring myself to move. And it was in that moment, I was like, you need to get help. You got to recover. You can't keep going the way you are. You're not going to be able to do this by yourself. Because I had been trying for a few weeks to find a way to do it by myself, but I was not succeeding. The eating disorder was controlling me.
So at that point, obviously you're seeing clients. Did any of your coworkers during this time, did they ever make comments?
No. They later told me they were talking to each other about it, but they never came and talked to me.
Wow. I'm really surprised.
I was too.
That was New Year's Eve of 2019.
Yes.
Do you think God allowed that moment?
I know he did because like standing there in the mirror, I started praying, who can you go to for help? Who can you talk to? And in that moment, the words my pastor's wife had spoken to me a few weeks prior came back into my brain. And I was like, please, anybody but her. I don't want to ask her for help.
I've had those moments where it wasn't my pastor's wife. It was actually my pastor. And something would be going on in my personal life. And I would hear him in the back of my head. Uh-huh. And he's like, girl, I mean, literally his voice and the tone of it is like, all right, now here's what you need to be doing. I think that's God's gentle way of saying, hey.
Yes.
And he uses those that are our leadership, those particular ones that have the greatest influence on us. Cause it does, it gets our attention.
Yes, it does.
So you heard your pastor's wife.
Yes. And I was like, okay, just let me go upstairs, grab what I need, finish my shower, and then I'll text her.
So you texted her that night?
No, I went upstairs, got what I needed. I was still crying. I sobbed my entire way through my shower. I got out, drying off. I was still sobbing, brushing my hair out. I was still sobbing. And then I was like, okay, you got to pull it together. Your dad's going to be back home any minute and you don't want him to come home and find you like this. So I locked myself in my room because I knew he would not be able to hear me if I couldn't pull it back together. And recollected myself. I don't know how many text messages that day I started to send to my pastor's wife, but deleted them and didn't send because I think there was just still that fear that, hey, I need help. But by reaching out to her, someone's going to be holding me accountable to recovery.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not ready for that yet. I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. And so I fought that all New Year's Eve, all New Year's Day. I even tried to call her a few times and couldn't bring myself to hit the dial button.
Now, did you still go to the youth?
I did. And it was actually during that event, actually right before we left the church, that I brought myself to text her because I was thinking, I'm like, oh my goodness. Like I was sitting in our youth pastor's vehicle he was going to be driving the church van and his wife was going to be driving their vehicle for our extra luggage. So I was going to ride with her. And I was sitting there, I'm like, oh my goodness, you're on your way to a youth event to help chaperone these teens and you're barely eating and they're probably going to notice something is off. And it was that moment, I described it to my pastor's wife. It felt like someone else's hands reached up, picked my phone up, typed a message and hit the send button. It didn't feel like it was my own hands doing it. It felt like it was someone else.
It sounds like God just gave you some help.
Yes. I remember we pulled into the hotel parking lot in Indianapolis a few hours later. And I had a text message from her. And I'm like, why is she texting me? I didn't even remember texting her. And I read the message. I'm like, oh yeah, that's why she texted me back.
Do you remember the text you sent her?
I actually still have it. So I said, hey, I hate to bother you. I was wondering if there would be any way you'd be available to meet with me and talk about some things I am struggling with at some point soon. It would be appreciated.
What was her response?
Her response is absolutely. And then like, I know we met about a week and a half later at Denny's and talked about everything that was going on.
So you met with her a week later. And then how did that conversation go?
It was honestly really hard. And I almost canceled meeting with her because again, it was still that fear. Once I meet with her, I'm really going to have to start putting, I'm not necessarily going to have to, but putting myself out there and having someone hold me accountable to recovery.
Yeah, it's just putting yourself out there because now it's like,
am I really ready for that? Even if I wasn't, I knew I needed to be.
Right.
And it was a really hard conversation. But I remember her telling me, she later told me that she herself was going to personally reach out to me after the holidays because she had noticed I was struggling. Because I mean, she had been there with me. Like she's known me since I was 11 years old. And so she was my high school Sunday school teacher. She was at my, I was homeschooled, so I didn't have a high school graduation, but she came to my graduation party. She was at my college graduation ceremonies. She's been there with me through a lot. So she knows me pretty well. And she was like, I was going to reach out to you after the holidays, but you reached out first. I've always questioned what would have happened if I wouldn't have reached out to her and she would have reached out first. Would I have been willing and ready? But I honestly don't think I would have without that moment I had in the mirror. I don't think I would have been ready.
Yeah, because I was thinking about when you said that she approached you, you know, the Christmas thing, like you weren't ready for that.
I wasn't.
And, you know, like we said, it's probably God because nobody was in the house with you.
Yeah.
And it was just that moment that God can finally get your attention and say, look, do you now see? Man, I'm still like, I'll probably be having to think on that one for a minute because that's a pretty intense moment.
Yeah.
That is.
It was. Every time I think about it, it gives me chills.
I got chills over here. Yeah, that is a very intense. And I just call those moments. There's a saying in the South, we say having one of those come to Jesus moments. And that's like what it is, come to Jesus moments. And it's just that where you finally hit the bottom and it's like, something's got to change here. So you met with her and you finally just told her what all was going on. So what did it look like after that?
I actually, after that very next week, it was hard, but for the first time in months, I was able to eat 3 meals each day. I decreased exercising from 10 miles a day to just doing maybe 10 minutes a day. Because I mean, I still wanted exercise to somehow be part of my daily routine because it is a good stress relief done in a healthy, controlled way.
Yes, a healthy way.
So I still wanted that to be part of my daily routine. But because I knew I needed to regain weight, I also knew I had to decrease significantly the amount I was doing until I got back to a healthy weight.
As far as like your coworkers, so now they're starting to see you starting to regain some weight in a healthy way. Did they ever say anything afterwards?
My supervisor talked to me about it a little bit because she noticed I was really struggling and not doing okay. Not like work performance, but just like personally. So she talked to me about it a little bit just to check in. I'm like, thanks. I'm meeting with my pastor's wife. we're talking things through and working on.
And then at any time in there, and I know we talked about this before, but because you finally reached out to your own therapist. Now, prior to all this, did you ever think about seeing your own therapist?
I had thought about it, but I really didn't want to at that time. And we were right in the middle of the stay-at-home orders with COVID.
Yes.
I was also in the middle of getting ready to move out of my parents' house to my own apartment.
So there's that stress. And that's the thing with the whole COVID and quarantine, everybody, the stress level, everybody was going through. You didn't know if he was going to go into work, which that could impact your finances. And then on top of it, toilet paper.
Oh my goodness.
Toilet paper, just basic necessities of life that added to the stress. And then you're moving out on top of it. So yeah, that's a lot of extra stress.
So I was working from home doing just telehealth. And then right after we went to work from home, you know, I had put my name on a waiting list to get into my own apartment. They called me and they're like, hey, we'll have an apartment available in a month if you're interested. And I was like, yes. I need my own space.
Yes, like yesterday.
So I was like getting ready to move and I was still just kind of working on my own recovery and just trying to balance everything out. And I probably should have reached out to a therapist at that time, but I guess I just didn't feel like with everything going on, I would have time for it.
The other thing too, you may have not been quite ready.
That was it too.
That's the other thing with therapy. Not everybody who comes to therapy is ready. Sometimes it takes a little while longer, but when you get ready, you're going to go and you're going to do it. And it's going to be worth it. How long after the quarantine started, what made you finally decide to reach out to a therapist at that point?
Things at home with my family were getting super stressful again. My sister had just moved to Indianapolis.
And you're out of the house by this point. You're in your own place.
Yes, I'm in my own place. So my sister had just moved to Indianapolis. And her and my parents got into a big fight about something.
Because they're now complete empty nesters.
Yes.
So they're having to readjust to each other.
Exactly.
Because it's no longer the kids.
Yeah, they got into a big fight about something. And my sister basically told them, sent my dad an email. And she was basically like, until you can do this, this, and this for me, you're not talking to me and you're not seeing the boys, your grandkids.
So she put some boundaries down, whatever it was.
I think she basically wanted an apology for my parents raising us apostolic. So, and then she called me and she's like, hey, this is what I did to mom and dad. You can see the boys, but you have to be supervised by either the boy's dad, which is my sister's ex-husband, or his mom. So I couldn't have them, but I could see them, just not by myself. And so this like happened. And just with all that going on, I was like, oh my goodness, I don't want to eat again. And by this point, you know, I'm at a very healthy weight. I'm back to what my weight needs to be. I'm like, I don't want to eat again. I just want to exercise constantly. I need to reach out to someone or I'm going to get back to that place I was at before.
So you started looking for a therapist and you found one. How has it gone, like, as far as therapy goes, that process?
I think it definitely helped with like my recovery because like, as I started to meet with her, I've always been a very guarded person. I've never like really opened myself up to other people, but by meeting with her, I was able to let my guard down. And because I also have a blog. And I wrote about my story on my blog with my eating disorder.
Now, up until that point, had she seen it or did she know anything about it?
Well, yeah, she, before I wrote my story, you know, about my eating disorder, she knew about it because we had talked about it. And then, I don't know, about 2 months later is when I shared my story on my blog. And it opened the doors to like so many conversations with people that had been wanting to, like people I knew.
That were following your blog.
Yes. And people I knew that were wanting to talk to me about it, but never felt like they could because of how closed off and guarded I was.
What do you think that you stayed guarded and closed off? What do you think the reason was behind that?
I grew up in an environment like, and my parents were amazing growing up. But they kind of, especially my mom, told us, you know, you don't talk about your feelings. You don't talk about your struggles. You keep them to yourself.
And your parents, you know, they're older generation. We're not giving away their age. We'll respect that on them. But I imagine they're probably a little bit older than me. And anybody that's, you know, probably 55, 60, somewhere in there up. And that was the whole mentality, the way it was way back then. You didn't talk about things. You kept your feelings private. You kept things private and you didn't share. And, you know, when you are raised in that way, and that's what you're taught, you don't open up to people. You just kind of, you keep it to yourself. I know the home life I grew up in, you didn't talk about things, but it wasn't because we didn't share. It's because my mother didn't want to get in trouble. So it was that other end of the extreme of it. She wasn't a very nice person all the time. I'll just put it that way. So you didn't talk about things. But older generations, that was how they were raised. Like you take it to the altar, you leave it at the altar. Don't dare bring it back up. You turn it over to Jesus and that's it. And, you know, for a long time, I think, especially with older therapists, particularly in the church, that was the mindset why the church was not meshed or did not agree with therapy, because that meant if you go to therapy, well, one, they thought therapists did all this woo-woo stuff. No, they don't. Not all therapists do interesting. I call it woo-woo stuff. It's just some of that. I don't know. To me, it's just weird. It's weird. I don't do the woo-woo stuff.
Yeah. My mom will sometimes make comments to me like, all you do is sit and talk to people all day. It's like, no, that's not all I do. She's like, you don't understand. Your job's not exhausting like mine is. My job might not be physically exhausting like hers is, but emotionally it can be.
Emotionally. Yeah. At the end of the day. And, you know, and here's the thing, you know, as a therapist, I love my job. I do. I love it, but I have to limit. I don't know about you, but I have to limit how many clients I see in a day, because at the end of the day, I listen to people. No, it's not always talking. Sometimes I just have to listen. Do I challenge my clients? Oh yeah. And I challenge them, and I'm not challenging them to be mean, but it's more of a challenge of like, hey, have you ever looked at it like this? Or you mean to tell me that this and this, and when I put it, you know, when I reframe it, it's like, oh, I never looked at it that way, you know, and I challenge them, and not to be mean or anything like that, but it's because I know sometimes we need our own thoughts challenged. Sometimes we need our own, whatever we're going through challenged. I love my job like you, you love your job, but there's at the end of the day, when you're working with people, you're tired. And it was a supervisor I had. She says, sometimes when I get off work, I just have to go get a shower just to kind of refresh my. I was like, you do that too? Because I didn't know anybody else did.
I will do that. Like today I got home from work and filled the tub up with hot water and just laid in it.
That's just part of self-care. One day I'm going to have to do a podcast all about what therapy is. I really am, because people have all these preconceived ideas. And back to your story, because I got totally sidetracked there like I normally do. I have ADD brain, so just bear with me. So you're seeing the therapist. She helped you work through just different things. I'm sure she challenged you.
Oh, yeah. And she still does.
And she still does.
Which I love. I said, even though it frustrates me sometimes, but.
But it's a good frustration.
It is.
Because, you know, I imagine you probably walk away and have to think about it. And it's like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Staying through it all, you know, I've been able to stand up to my mom in ways I haven't before.
So it's helped you with the boundaries.
Mm-hmm. It definitely has. Yeah. I've been able to make more time for myself. I've learned to tell my family, hey, if they want me to do something with them that night and I'm not feeling like it, I've learned to just be like, hey, no, I don't feel like it. I'm staying home tonight. They're getting mad at me, but I'm like, you know what? I'm done feeling guilty for telling you guys no. I don't have to do stuff with you all the time.
Right. That's an interesting thing you bring up about feeling guilty. Like prior to like when you're with the eating disorder, was there a lot of guilt or shaming?
I kind of feel like there was.
And then so then you go through this whole process and you've learned how to have healthy boundaries and when to say no and when it's okay to say no. And you said in the beginning that when you started doing that, they'd get mad at you.
They would get really mad at me and just be like, whatever, and hang up the phone.
But now how did they, since then, because I'm sure they've had to adjust to that a few times. Like, how are they with it now when you say, you know what, I just need to stay home tonight?
Sometimes they're okay with it. Sometimes they're not. And there was once, like, and you know, they know like the topic of like my weight and eating disorder with them anyway is off limit, but they like to push that button sometimes.
So you then told them, no, I don't want to discuss this with you.
Yes. They know I don't want to talk about it with them, but they will push that button sometimes. And there's been a time or two where they brought it up in a restaurant and I got up and walked out and walked home.
Okay. And sometimes that's what you have to do. Setting boundaries, especially when in times past, it may have not always been the most healthiest boundaries. Starting to set those can be so hard, but once you get the hang of it, it is so nice. And for some of us, it takes a while to figure it out, and that's okay.
Yep. And then there was another time at a restaurant, and it was a day where the meal we had at the restaurant was like a huge meal, and I could not finish all the food on the plate because it was just a lot of food. And my mom's like, you really need to finish that because I don't want to have to take you home to put this in the fridge before we go do what we're going to do. I'm like, I'm full. I don't want it. She's like, no, you need to finish it. I was like, I am going to take it home.
Now, did your mom raise you for the clean your plate club?
Yes.
You know, you better clean everything off that plate because there's starving little kids over in that third world nation, you know.
Yes, I was like, I am stuffed. I cannot eat this. If I eat it anymore, I am going to be sick. And she kept egging it on. And I finally looked at her and I was like, if you want this gone because you don't want to take me home, you eat it yourself.
So now that where you're at now, compared to when you started this journey, how do you think things have changed for you?
I mean, I'm going to be honest and say, you know, there are moments when I still struggle, like, especially on the stressful days.
So there's days that it's stressful.
There's days that it's stressful. And I do struggle on those days. Like last week, it was just a really, really stressful week. And I struggled a lot last week and like struggled with my thoughts of, oh my goodness, you shouldn't eat, you know, because this is going on. You shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that. You need to go exercise more. And I just had to push those thoughts out of my mind. And while I ate lunch and dinner and breakfast, so, you know, I made myself eat, but because of my thoughts, I didn't really allow myself to like do, like there was one day where I don't even know if I ate any snacks in between meals. And usually, like, especially on my days at work where I'm there until like 7 p.m., I always try to eat something like around 3 or 4 just to hold me over until I could get home at 7:30 and eat dinner. But I wouldn't even let myself do that.
Here's a really, really important key thing that a lot of people don't realize. You know, as somebody who's going through an eating disorder, especially when you're in the midst of when it's just really chaotic, you go through that. And most people I know that go through that literally hate themselves. Was that the case for you?
Yeah, I hated myself. I got to a point, I don't want to say I wanted to die because I never wanted to die, but I wanted to pack up all my stuff and just like disappear somewhere where no one could find me and change my number, change my name, and just no one could find me, just disappear somewhere just to escape everything.
Right. Now, where do you feel you're at as far as loving yourself?
There are days where it's hard to love and accept yourself. But I have to, you know, tell myself like, hey, who does God say I am? What does God say about me? And just like counter those lies in my brain with what I know God says about me is true.
That is so important too, is like anything you struggle with, find scripture. Like you said, you would counter it with things. What does God say? And if somebody struggles with fear, find scripture in the Bible that counteracts that fear. Like I deal with anxiety and sometimes it gets to be really challenging. And so I have to sit there and quote verses when it's really, really bad.
And there are two things like that's really helped me through it on days when I've been struggling. And the first one is like from Psalm 139:14, where it says, you know, I'll praise thee for I'm fearfully and wonderfully made.
Yes.
And I have to like remind myself of that verse. Like every day I have to remind myself of that verse.
Right.
And then there's another one. There's actually a quote I found at the beginning of this year that's really helped me through the year too. And it goes like, and then she realized that a fresh start was hers for the taking, that she could be the woman she's always seen on the distant horizon, her future self, one step at a time, starting today.
That's awesome.
So like days when I'm struggling, I can go to those two things and read them. And then I can also go look up other scripture and just list everything in my brain that God says about me.
That is awesome. And I think that's such a wonderful way to do that. You know, as we wrap up, I want you to talk to that person out there, whoever that may be, whether it's a woman, a young woman, a teenager, maybe it's, you know, and here's the other thing too. Sometimes it's guys. Guys struggle with eating disorders. It's not as talked about as much, but guys struggle with eating disorders as well, because, you know, here then they see in the fashion magazines, these male models, and they're all, you know, all got the six packs and this whole facade of things. And that's what it is. It's a facade to get you to try and, oh, if I look this way, you know, I buy that product, I'll look this way. And that's a lie. That is just such a lie. So talk to that person out there, whoever it may be, that is right in the midst of going through. Maybe they're dealing with anorexia. Maybe they're not eating. Maybe they're restricting eating. Like you said, like for you, was that 500 calories or less a day? Talk to that person.
There's always hope, no matter what you're going through. Reach out to someone, you know, a friend, your pastor's wife, your youth pastor or his wife. Reach out to someone and just tell them what's going on, because they're always willing to help. And just like tell yourself, you know, God cares about you. God says you're beautiful. You know, you're fearfully and wonderfully made. And don't listen to the lies in your head. That's what I did. And I don't want to see anyone else do that, because those lies, they're not true. They come from the devil. And stop letting it control you.
I think that's some awesome advice, some very much needed advice for someone out there. And I just feel like this is going to really touch, because I think an eating disorder is one of those hidden things in the church that we don't talk about. And that was the other reason why I wanted you to be a guest on here, because it's bringing light to those taboo topics.
Yes.
And anorexia, bulimia, binge eating, any of it, it's one of those taboo topics, and it's a very real thing. It needs to be talked about. It needs to be discussed, because if it's not discussed, guess what? We can't bring hope and we can't bring healing. And that is the whole goal of this podcast, is to help people who are struggling, to help people get through those things. And so I'm so glad you've agreed to come on the podcast. I really appreciated your testimony and your story. And yes, you're a therapist, but you know what? You're also human.
Mm-hmm.
And even therapists struggle. And I think you're doing an awesome job. And this is going to reach a lot of people. It really is. So thank you again for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. If this has touched you, if this has resonated with you, or if you know somebody who is struggling with an eating disorder, whatever that may be, you know, first of all, pray for them. Pray for God to give you wisdom. Share this podcast with them. If this is you and you are struggling with an eating disorder, know that you are not alone. There is people out there that will help you. There is people out there that do understand. Pray that God will send you to the right person, but definitely get some help, because this is something that's a hard fight to do on its own. So you need extra help, and find an accountability partner. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's no shame in that. But one thing is for certain, you are, whoever you are out there, you are, like Cassie said, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. God loves you. God loves you. And I, for one, care. I care about you and I care about people out there who struggle. That's why I do this podcast. That's why I have guests like Cassie on my podcast to share their story and their testimony and to let you know, hey, you can get through this. So until next time, have a blessed and wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to the Real Talk 238 podcast for this week's episode. If you have enjoyed this episode of the Real Talk 238 podcast, please subscribe so you will be notified when new episodes are released. If you would like to leave a comment, or there is a topic you would like discussed on the Real Talk 238 podcast, you can drop an email at therealtalk238@gmail.com. You can also find the Real Talk 238 podcast on Facebook and Instagram listed as at The Real Talk 238. As a reminder, The Real Talk 238 podcast is not a substitute, nor does it replace therapy. Always seek the advice of your physician or a qualified licensed mental health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or mental health disorder. Until next time, have a blessed day.